Welcome back to another episode of the Call Me Other podcast. This is Faith, and today I am joined with a very special guest, Aaron Armstrong. How are you?
I'm great today. How are you doing, Faith?
Good. Now I got to give you an intro, okay? Because you are a veteran, an entrepreneur, and a podcaster. You have your own show, Winners, Wallets, and Worldviews. And then we were just talking off cam, and you are actually also play the guitar as well.
Yeah, a little bit of guitar. Yeah, just enough to be dangerous.
Right? So I want to start with the backstory. Sure. How did you get so well-rounded? What was it first? Did you always know you wanted to go into the military, or were you into entrepreneurship first? Who was Aaron the kid?
Wow, yeah. When I was a kid, I had a lot of different interests and hobbies, but mostly I think you'd categorize me as like a jock.
Okay.
You know, I was definitely into football, basketball. Uh-huh. I ran track in high school, 3-sport athlete.
Yeah.
And it was really unusual. I remember when I told my dad I wanted to play guitar when I was younger, he was like, so what are you going to be, like one of those hippies that smokes pot and grows your hair out and all that stuff? And
I'm of
like,
course, Dad, you know.
I'm like, no, I just, you know, I like classic rock and the blues. Like, I want to kind of get in there. So I remember that conversation, and my grandmother was going to buy me one for Christmas. And she said, she was a guidance counselor. So she sat us both down and said, Brett, is this okay if we buy AJ a guitar? And he's like, it's fine. And then 2 years later, I got good enough to where I could play most of the songs he liked. He's like, this is actually pretty cool, you know?
Uh-huh.
So we all made it up. But that was kind of me as a kid. I remember there was this weird contrast between a space I wanted to be creative in. And then there was this kind of like, you could say black and white masculine environment with like sports, which is very much like you play to win. It's like, this is the score is the score and this competition. And I was always in this like contrast between that, I would say, throughout most of my youth. And trying to figure out, where do I fit into that?
Yeah, because sports are so structured. You do this at this time. This is how we practice.
You show up on time. Discipline.
Team atmosphere.
You know, right. And then the creative side of you is so much different, right?
It is, because it's kind of impulsive. When you're creative, it's kind of like some, which you know, from just having to do podcasts, sometimes you just wake up with ideas and you could just work off of that.
Yes.
Versus sports is like, they set the schedules early, like a year beforehand. So how are you able to combine those elements to kind of grow as from a boy to a man?
Yeah. So, well, when I turned 18 or 19 or 17, I was getting recruited to play football. It's really good. So I got asked to, I got a full ride scholarship to Army at West Point. And that was, at that time, it was like 2009, Forbes magazine had released this article that said number one school in the country, West Point, United States Military Academy. And I was like, whoa, like, and I got an opportunity to play football there. I'm like, I'm in, you know, like, I know that that's going to set me up if I can get in there.
Uh-huh.
So I made that decision, but everyone knows there's like a catch with that. You know, you have to spend 5 years of active duty in the Army.
Okay.
So that's a big decision for a 17 or 18 year old. Well, it turns out my ACT score came back and said, like, dude, you're pretty much illiterate. So you got to go to the prep school. So I was like, okay. And they're like, it's all good. It's all good. Like most of the jocks or the football players and the lacrosse players go to the prep school to get ready to go.
Okay.
And then they go. So that's why I did it for a year. Jump into the academy my freshman year. They called it plebes. That was an entire experience within itself. I ended up graduating with a degree in systems engineering, which I chose.
That's pretty good.
Because I wasn't creative.
Okay.
Weirdly enough, right?
Yeah.
Like I was always good at English. I was always good at like literature and some of those pieces that like made you expand your mind. I was like a good artist. I played music and I was like, I'm bad at math.
Okay.
So I was like, let's go into a math field to figure it out. Right.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I did. And I struggled through it, but I think that helped my like mindset was, how do I be more well-rounded? Like, how do I cover my blind spots?
Right.
And at West Point was an engineering school. I was like, I should be an engineer.
I love that because it kind of like takes you through a journey that kind of took you away from, I imagine military school would be just a lot structured.
Oh, a lot, so yeah.
it kind of, I guess, suppressed that creative element, or did you guys were able to express that? Did you have like clubs? I know in all type of colleges and different secondary education, they provide you all type of things. Did you have that element?
We called it mandatory fun.
Oh, mandatory. Was mandatory fun parties, or was mandatory
fun? Mandatory fun was exactly like it sounds like. Like, we're gonna have, you can socialize between these times and this, and it was definitely the creative side was uncommon. There are very creative people that come out of West Point, and there's very creative people that later on kind of find it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's necessary, like when you're learning an instrument. Like when I was learning guitar, it was very difficult. It was structured, it was disciplined, you had to practice all the time. But later on, you kind of were blessed this opportunity to now do it unconsciously. You were able to kind of like feel the groove of the music. I think that's kind of what West Point does with a lot of people is like, you're not really in a creative environment when you're there, but it almost gives you the ability to be creative later.
Okay. So where were you with your sports career when you were also at West Point? Cause I know that's initially where you went. So what was the turning point for you, if you will? Cause I know you did more time in the military.
Yeah. So I played football for 3 years and I had a knee injury.
Okay.
My junior year I had a bad cartilage damage that was in my left knee. The surgeon said, if you want a commission, you know, become an officer and go into the army after and graduate, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of medical restrictions to be able to just graduate. You should really take this next year off, your senior year. And I was like, well, okay, what does that look like? And the coach was like, look, you know a lot about the game. You're kind of the hype man of the team. So he's like, what I want to like bring you on as kind of like a student assistant coach. And I was like, well, it's kind of like, you know, okay, I guess it's the lukewarm solution.
You get to travel with the team.
But you know, you're with the team. And I was like a no crap coach. Uh-huh. Like they put me, I was in film. I was like studying stuff. That was right at the beginning of the analytics thing in sports. And they put me into this thing where I was using analytics with recruiting, making decisions on like fourth down conversions and punt team and all those types of things. And that was like the beginning of that. And I was part of that team that kind of set that up at West Point with my background in systems engineers, because I was the only one that knew how to use like a spreadsheet. And that was a pretty cool experience. And then graduation came and I became an officer in Air Defense Artillery branch of the Army.
Wow. Now, taking people through that, I hope people realize how all of that connected together. What you did, your degree, you were able to apply that to sports. And all now you're getting all these skills, right? So when you graduate, what made you make the decision to be like, you know what, I kind of like this path? Or did it come naturally? Or
what's cool about the Army and mm-hmm. being a leader in the Army is, you ever watch like an old war movie or like a Saving Private Ryan or something? It's like, you are really forced to figure it out mm-hmm. because it's life and death, right? So like they train you to just, no matter what situation you're mm-hmm. in, like figure it out, use your wits, use your creativity, and then be like execute as a leader and try to make the decision and go. And I think that was really cool, because you can, anything they throw at you, there's nothing off limits.
Right.
And you're trained to think that way. And a lot of times an officer or anybody in the Army really can take whatever problem or challenge they're running into mm-hmm. in any industry or profession or whatever mm-hmm. and have to make it work to fit the mission. Yeah. That was what was really cool, I think, about the training that mm-hmm. went into being a military leader. Unfortunately for me, 18 months into the Army, my knee started to swell up and it started to get to the point where like mm-hmm. I couldn't really bend it very well. So I wasn't able to run. So I go into the orthopedic surgeon and he's like, this has turned into a really severe case of osteoarthritis.
Whoa.
And the bones started to degenerate.
You're in your 20s.
Yeah, I'm in my 20s and I'm sitting there thinking like, am I gonna be able to play catch with my kids, you know? Stuff. And he's like, listen, honestly, you know, you got a systems engineering degree. You came out of West Point. I think you'll be fine in life. You know, take the out, because we don't have a lot of treatment for this. So I said, okay, I made the decision to leave the military with a medical honorable discharge.
Okay.
And then I was like, well, now what, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened. I was like, now what?
And then on top of that, you're moving a lot, because that's something me and you both have in common. We've both moved a lot. I've went from Texas to Mississippi to now Wisconsin. So you're moving, you're going through all of this, and then you take the honorable discharge. And what were you then thinking, like, okay, what do I do? Or were you like, I can lean into my creative element? What made you?
Well, so that was the thing. Like, okay. I'm like, this may be the opportunity for a creative element.
Okay.
How do you make that work?
Yeah.
And I had done, like, right when I graduated mm-hmm. and I was going into the Army, I was like, I'm going to be responsible for men and women in the United States Army. Like, this is a huge response. So I started taking up a lot of professional reading. That turned into like a lot of like motivational readers and a lot of entrepreneurial types of authors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of business leaders and all this time, I always knew there was like, I'm like, maybe this entrepreneurship path could be a potential opportunity for me. So when I got out of the Army, that was always scratching at the back of my brain.
Yeah.
And then I took a job with Oshkosh Defense, which I grew up in Neenah. Uh-huh. So I was down in Texas at the time. And
great
I said,
state.
Great state. I love Texas. Fort Bliss too. You know what? And quick fact about El Paso, Texas. Uh-huh. I think there's more Packer fans there than Cowboy fans. I'm dead serious.
Well, now with Aaron Jones, I bet. So I bet right now.
I would just be walking down the street. I'd see Packer, Packer, Packer. And I'm like, I'm in Texas right now. Yeah. There should be way more Cowboy people, especially on the West Texas, you know? Mm-mm.
I tell people that, and we're going so off subject right now, but you know what? That's what podcasts are for. People don't realize how big the Packers are outside of Green Bay. That's why like people were like, you're going to see when you get to that area, it's going to be like a culture. I was just like, in Texas, everywhere I've went, that you always see that green, that you always see that emblem somewhere. I mean, just the heart. I don't know, y'all. We could argue about who's really America's team.
That's right. You know, and I try to make that argument every time I get a chance to. But anyway, okay. I'm in Texas and I'm like, well, I get this job opportunity to come back. And my parents were like really pressuring me, like, well, just get your feet, you know, together. Yeah. We're just down the street. And Oshkosh Corporation, Oshkosh Defense, you know, major defense contractor, great opportunity for a systems engineer. And they gave me one of those, what do you want salaries? Mm-hmm. You know, and I just was like, well, okay, I took it, right? Uh-huh. Came here. Started using my putting money aside to get into real estate investing. Okay. I did a technique called wholesaling, and wholesaling is where you basically reassign contracts to one another and you could take the difference during escrow. That's a strategy, you know, for another day.
And right quick, are you learning these skills on your own, or was this something that you learned in school?
There's nothing in school really that what's great about West Point is that it teaches you how to think. It doesn't teach you what to think. Okay. And I think that's what the benefit of college should be for a lot of people too. Like, you don't necessarily need a one for one, this is what I did, this is what I learned, but more of like, oh, I know how to breeze through a textbook in any subject, pick out the lesson objectives, figure out how to execute this in real life. I think
I'm
that's
good
the value
for an outline.
Like the spark notes, right?
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of how I approached the wholesaling subject. And I also knew the way I think is like the power of who. Like, who do I need to know?
Okay.
And to this day, I give advice to people who want to get started in real estate. I say there's things called like local REAs, or your real estate investment associations. They're kind of like independently organized, you know, meetings among different investors of different categories and different levels. I say, go find a couple of those. Some places sell you stuff, some don't, whatever. And I always say, go to the alpha, find the alpha in the room. Like, don't mess around with all the handout cards or whatever. Find the person that's in charge, that's running the event, and try to get under their wing, or try to make friends with them and figure out, pull their brain. That's kind of what I did. So I made friends with one that was local in town. His name is Jason Lund. He does house flipping and stuff in the area. Taught me a lot of things to look out for, to watch for. And we started to acquire multifamily properties and started to build real estate portfolios and started to use the equity to accumulate more. And this kind of became a fast way, for lack of a better word, to accumulate wealth on paper.
Okay.
And that was where I started to realize, wow, this entrepreneur thing could be kind of cool. In the process of that, we found a property that I was like, Marissa, she was my wife. I'm like, this would be perfect for a personal training studio. She's like, what are you talking about? This is a barbershop. and we both looked at it for a second. She's like, you know what? That would be perfect. Because she thinks like I do. She's like, I can see it. And we go to the agent that was selling it. Some commercial guy's like, what are you, a hairstylist or something? He's like, looking at my wife. And she's like, no, fitness. This will be a fitness, a fitness studio. And he's like, sure, let's just get the paperwork going. And
what are these kids?
So now we had the real estate business, and then my wife had started Marissa's Fit Boutique.
Okay.
And that was kind of like this aha, wow, entrepreneurship is pretty cool.
And I love that also, because entrepreneurship is something that I think we and millennials have went crazy for. So to hear how you kind of like progressed and worked your way to it through learning like real estate, I didn't even know that you had that element to you. So it was like, I don't even want to say a process, but all things connected.
Yes, right. Because it's like, it goes back to the how to think, not what to think. Business, everything's a business. Yeah. Everything's a business. Everything is, who are the people that can green light things? Mm-hmm. That's in every organization, any level, whatever you want to do, from making movies to getting a podcast produced to getting into real estate, to getting a banker to sign off on a loan, to finding a venture capital, whatever. There's decision makers in all these places, and finding those, that's one piece. That's like the how to think. You know,
so being behind all of that, how much of that was just throwing yourself at it or doing research? Because I think so many of us are trying to do things and we like think ourselves out of it. We're like, oh, okay, I need to Google all of this. So how much of it was just for you instinct, just going after it? And how much of it was just like you actually sitting back and doing your proper research and, you know, doing that slow-mo process?
Yep. That is a great question, because I think that's this question everybody struggles with the most. It's like this, just Leroy Jenkins, like dive all in and just whatever, send it, you know, like, and then there's this other side of the coin that's like, well, paralysis by analysis. There's so much conflicting data that talks me out of taking any action. I've always leaned on the side intuitively to just take action, because I'm confident in myself that I can figure it out if I run into challenges or problems, because I know myself well enough that like, we'll figure it out. Like, we can do this if there's challenges or issues. I made that mistake early on, though, to be too bullish, we should say, to where I jumped in too much. Then in my mid-20s, I went like the opposite way and went so far into the analysis, I wasn't doing anything. And I kept talking myself out of it. And now I think it becomes almost like, you know, when you're in a job for a while and you kind of know exactly what you got to do, mm-hmm. and you know the right times to research and gain more information, then you know the times you've seen it enough to where you can just go. Now I think I'm in that spot. So when I made the decision, which with the studio that we're in, the venture project, it was made off of like, this is enough analysis, but I'm okay with this amount of uncertainty. And now I can make the decision.
Right. And we are on location at the venture project. So I know you have the real estate and then you went to your wife's studio and then now you have this.
Right.
Birthing each baby. How was that process for you to, because entrepreneurship, especially e-commerce, a lot of people are doing things online. It's different when you have brick and mortar. You have to keep these lights on. Mm-hmm. You have to have people in here, people, businesses working with you. So how do you connect all of that, especially with the modern day element, I guess?
Yeah. So I think a lot of times when I'm finding it difficult to get traction in a specific area, sometimes it's like a zigzag. Like when you zig one way, you zag the other. And that's kind of what I was noticing with my business. So when we launched Mercer's Fit Boutique, we launched Armstrong Real Estate, and a lot of my friends were calling me nonstop. So I got into the world of online coaching consulting with Armstrong Ventures. I rolled it out. I started a podcast. We're going to just broadcast mass information. The call to action will be consults where we can work with you on your strategies, because I just believe that the how to think piece of this is like, look, if we apply this to what you're doing, it'll give you enough tools and tactics mm-hmm. to where you'll be able to kind of like maneuver your own unique situation. And I ran with that for probably a year and a half, 2 years. And then I started to see like the world shifting over to almost saturating the online, to where it became like so noisy on social media, the addictions to the phone and everything was crazy. I'm like, how do I pull people back offline? So I started going speaking around the country, talking to people. And like, it was way easier for me to connect with real people, talk to them and just like, you know, get a hold of an actual person. Mm-hmm. And I think that was beautiful. Then COVID hits. I'm like, how do I keep this offline thing going? The venture project. We'll create an environment where it's the same thing. We'll do business coaching. We'll do consulting. We'll hear business invention ideas. We'll figure out your problems in a brick and mortar location and just touch the community. And eventually the community will touch the region, and then we can touch the state and the nation and so on, and snowball from there.
Yes. And that's so important, because I'm from Port Arthur, Texas. That's right outside of Houston. And you're from Neenah, but your business is in Oshkosh. So many of us think out there, which is something I've also talked to you about. So many of us think out there, oh, let's go to these big communities. The dream is, even I did that when I went to college, I went to University of Houston. I was like, I'm going to Houston. And I lived out there, pumped so much money into their economy. But what makes you feel like it's comfortability in building up our smaller communities?
Yeah, I can completely relate to what you're saying. My two goals, when I was at West Point, I would daydream about either Hollywood or Wall Street. Ooh. Hollywood, Wall Street, like the two cream of the crop, most competitive like environments you can find in the entire world. That's where I got to be.
Right.
And I started to realize, and then it wasn't until I was 22 years old, I sat down with a meeting. I was like, I want to be a Hollywood producer. Like, that's what I wanted to do, right? Like, okay, join the club, right? Everybody wants to do that. And I said, how do I do this? There's got to be a guy in our West Point network that's made films, right? Like West Point, they have a huge network. So I find one. His name's Rod Lurie. He actually, if you saw the movie The Outpost on Netflix with Orlando Bloom and Scott Eastwood and those folks.
He produced it?
He directed it and took it off the Jake Tapper book, The Outpost, right? So, and he also did one in early 2000s called The Last Castle, had Mark Ruffalo and Robert Redford. So he's certainly a top tier Hollywood producer and director. Mm-hmm. So I somehow reached out to him. He reached out back, and I was in Oklahoma at the time, and he's like, I'm actually gonna be in Oklahoma City in the next week. I'm like, wow, that just worked. So I take a meeting up there with him, and I sit down, and he just starts telling me the dark disgustingness of Hollywood. And how like this industry is cutthroat, how it's just all these horror stories and stuff. I'm sitting there like, dude, I don't know if I want to deal with this. What would you do if you were me? He's like, well, there's three ways. One, you can go push pencils in the mail room at CAA for several years and hope that you can rub elbows with the right guy. And maybe they'll take a look at your script. He's like, number two, he's like, you can know somebody. He's like, you know me, but I don't effing know you. And he just kept saying that. I'm like, okay. And he's like, but you know, maybe you can come on set with me sometime. You know, it's being like real nice. And then he's like,
I still don't know you.
I still don't know you. I don't trust you. Like, you know, and I'm like, I get it, you know? And then the third one, he's like, or what I would probably do is try to go the unbeaten trail, like try to self-produce your own films or self-produce your own brand, build that up. And eventually, if you get enough of an organic following, you'll be able to have leverage and power to negotiate other people with other people. So that's basically what I've been trying to do for the last decade, right? Yeah. Is like, how do I produce my own films? Like, we have video guys here, like we build a personal brand
that are awesome.
This podcast. Yeah, they, you know, and trying to like build that personal brand to give us leverage to promote other things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's my long-winded answer, I guess, to your question. I don't even know if we got back to the question.
No, but that's so important because like sometimes you have to start where you are. So some people might have been like, well, even maybe let's go to Milwaukee or even let's go to Minneapolis. Let's take let's try just the bigger city, the more you could pull in people. But going and choosing to be in a, where you're from, your roots, I feel like you kind of already come with the base because people, you know, small towns, everybody knows everybody. Doesn't mean they always will support you.
But. And you got to think that like your network is real estate that you own too. Mm-hmm. Another friend of mine, her name's Kat Seymour. She's mm-hmm. really well. She works for Deloitte now, but she always said mm-hmm. that the best networking is just harvesting the network that you already have. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's just where you are. So people say, I'm going to run and go bust tables in Hollywood. It's like, well, I start from scratch. Yeah. Like you might know people today in your community that you can leverage connections and eventually build trust with and relationships, warm up 3 or 4 levels. And now you got a connection, open door to the guy you need mm-hmm. or the girl you need. And I think that's the exact strategy where we have on the wall. You saw, you know, when you came in the other day, it's bloom where you're planted. There's an opportunity to use your network, use the community around you, make an impact, be a big fish in a small pond. And eventually, I mean, being a big fish in a small pond is way better than being a small fish in a gigantic pond. And that's what most people end up doing.
That is
they're just like, oh, well, now it's even more difficult to gain any traction because I literally have nobody around me. Because if you're a big fish in a small pond, well, then you can go at least be a medium-sized fish in a humongous pond and you have a fighting chance out there. And I think that's where I like to recommend with people. It's like, where are your feet at? How do we figure out how to make what you're doing right now work, get traction, build to the bigger goal?
And that's super, that is really essential for me because I feel like so many people look at things and they're just like, you got to move to LA or you have to do this. And really we're learning through the pandemic. That's not even necessary because how many of these kids or how many people have gone viral and been able to build little brands throughout just at their home in Colorado or at their home in Louisiana or whatever, wherever they are. But I think there's still this mind state of, I need to do it in LA. I need to do it in New York. Cause I think that was a dream for me, especially being a journalist. Like, who doesn't want to work in the big ABC in Good Morning America in New York?
Well, exactly. Uh-huh. And I think a lot of people run into that issue is they chase the shiny object away mm-hmm. from the idea of like, I need to go. They set these rules for themselves. Like, I need to be here first before I can do something. I need to achieve this before I'm able to do this. And that's all limiting beliefs. Like, you can do this right now. What can you do right now? And how can you take action in the right direction right now? And become valuable. And that's the big question. It's like, well, I keep thinking of all these things I need to do. You're not thinking about how do I just become more valuable? Well, can you be valuable in your community? Mm-hmm. If you can't sell your product to 10 or 15 of your families and your family friends, well, how are you going to sell to just a bunch of random strangers that don't give a crap about you?
That's true.
And it's the same thing with everything else. If I can't make a film that can go viral with my Facebook group, mm-hmm. how can I make a film that people are going to pay money out of their pockets that don't know you in China to go to the theaters, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same idea. So it's like, using your community is almost your proof of concept.
I think that's, I like that. And that's true because proof of concept, I like that phrase too. I like all those phrases you're throwing out there. But bloom where you grow, about that, as far as it goes with that, and also being able to, you know, transfer and be able to take over other markets for that, for you, how much of what do you feel like is your gift? Because I feel like even talking to you and just like just how much you're able to inspire me, how much of that is a gift for you? Because you can't just make any man off the street Aaron Armstrong.
well, yeah, but you know, like everybody's got a gift. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got certain strengths in their pocket mm-hmm. and things that they're very good at. Some people might not be good talkers, right? So like I do okay talking, but I'm not the best at like writing or just executing or, you know, hustling or whatever, right? And everybody's got something unique about them. So maybe you're a writer, maybe you're an introvert that sits there, but you can craft beautiful stories and maybe like a blogging medium, being an author, writing articles, researching, being a research assistant, all these types of things is your path. And you can start to make strategic partnerships with people of other strengths. And then eventually you start to connect this network and you know you can plug and play your community eventually, excuse me, to get in the right direction. And I think that whatever you have within you is what we need to exfoliate or magnify, we should say. And that's the strategy to look at. Because everyone's like, I want to be like this person. It's like, well, who are you first? And now we know who you are. You can do these five strengths way better than anybody else, which might put you in a totally different industry or category.
Right.
And that's, I think, the challenge people should look to achieve instead of trying to be somebody that they're not.
Self-awareness, that's key. You have to know who, like you said, knowing who you are. So a lot of people sometimes do set goals that are maybe just not for them. Right. So for you being self-aware and just kind of knowing those goals for you, how are you able to, you know, they say jack of all trades, master of none, being that you do have Armstrong Ventures, you have your wife's business, you all have a lot going, the venture project. How are you able to monopolize off of that and kind of put it all together? Because sometimes people will say, you need to focus in on one thing. Just do this one thing. Right. But for you, you have multiple entities.
Well, I think there is like, and I've thought about maybe this be a book I could write someday, but I think there is value in trying to be a generalist in a lot of ways. Because as a leader, you don't need to be the expert in one thing. You need to be able to dive into the thing that matters most at a time. So you still need to understand details. You still need to be able to get into the weeds and have a clear understanding of certain things, but you only need to do that at the time that it's necessary. And then you can back out, and then you need to be able to manage most of the things. Think of a CEO in a company.
Okay.
You know, you have human resources, you have IT, you have engineering, you have manufacturing. You have all these things with unlimited levels of detail to them. And you need to be able to steer the ship to know exactly what needs to go where and when. And I think that there's a lot of value in understanding that. Now, when it came to the venture project, it was kind of goofy. Like, as I explained with my story, I mean, we had this, like, my wife owns a fitness business. We had this real estate thing going on. I have this podcast thing going on. I play guitar. Like, what? How does this?
Now we're doing this.
And I'm explaining this to people. I'm like, it's going to be, I got an idea. Office space, real estate. We rent out some of the spaces, you know, that's the real estate model. That'll pay for some of these other things. Like, what about a podcast studio where people can come in? There's got to be other podcasters like me that want to utilize a cool studio. They can record their podcast. So now, and I got the podcast, you got the real estate thing connected. How about, like, everybody, it's going to be an incubator, because that's a common theme in other states, is like they have business incubators with their co-working spaces. That way people can bring their ideas here. They can meet with me or my network, and we can figure out how to make their ideas happen, whatever they happen to be. That gives a ton of variety. I mean, we've had anything from invention ideas to service industries to apps and programs. It's crazy how the types of people we've had in here, but it gives a lot of variety. So I'm able to help in different ways. Like, I know somebody that you can talk to. We brought engineers in here to help them design. I know someone to talk to. I know a programmer that sits down the street. And it's just like, now we have this like launch pad for just a million different ideas. We have music in here. We have a recording studio. I mean, it's just like,
there's everything.
And I was explaining this to people before we did it. They're just looking at me like, whoa, I'm so confused. So there's gonna be like music in offices. And I'm like, just wait. And when people walk through, they're like, oh yeah, this makes sense. And I'm like, see, you know, it's just like, so sometimes it's executing it and letting people see it to believe it.
And how much of that goes into, how much of that journey, because for you, you know, you said you had this conversation with the Hollywood producer at 22, and so much of that is timing and pacing yourself, really. So how much of that is patience in your journey? Because you evolved now, and we see all these successful things, like me just researching you, all these great things you're a part of, but how much of that was time and patience and really, like, I guess being patient towards the journey, because it didn't happen overnight for you.
No, exactly. And I remember, about 18 months ago, I was just stuck in my business journey. And I had this idea for the venture project 6 months, 12 months, probably before that. And I'm just, it's just churning in my brain. And, you know, I'm a man of faith. So I sat down, I just prayed. I said, listen, you know, how do I do this for you? How do I help glorify you? Like, what does this need to be? And everything was like, wait, patience. So for 18 months, I prayed about this. And I sat there and I just was churning it around. I'm like, I want to go. Like, I found a spot. No, not time. You know, not time. And I'm sitting there, and I knew, because I am so trigger happy to just go in and figure it out.
Impulsive.
I needed to wait. And this whole thing unfolded right at the end of the pandemic. People are itching to get out. The timing is beautiful. Nothing else is opening. So, you know, we get a lot of natural publicity because of it. And we have a whole community of people. It's like, I'm ready to, they've been sitting around thinking about their ideas or whatever, or how they're questioning their business, or, and they're like, I want to start a business. I mean, whatever, it was just a blessing to wait that 18 months. It just worked. And I had this idea for 3 years and I'm like, how is this ever going to happen? Do I have the capital to do this or whatever. And it just fell into place because of that patience, because I waited enough to get every single piece of the puzzle there. And then it started to click.
With that being said, you talked about capital, and that's something I wish I would have went to when you were talking about real estate. How important is capital whenever you come into businesses and creating things like that? Because most people, you know, we all live paycheck to paycheck. So I think a lot of people think like, oh, I have to go out and try to make all this money and save up all this. But there is value in capital loans. There's so many different ways to make your dreams happen. They have grants if you're lucky enough. The very few people that get those. So how do you feel about raising capital?
Yeah, so I think that's another thing. We had some entrepreneurs in here that had an idea and they're like, yeah, we just need $1 million venture capitalist to jump in. I'm like, $1 million. Okay. Do you realize what you're asking for right now in your idea? I'm like, this whole building was built on a shoestring. This whole project was built on a shoestring budget. The building was already here, but we obviously moved in. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to show entrepreneurs that you can do this without using much money at all. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be a case study and almost like a little experiment for myself too. Mm-hmm. And there was lots of strategies that we used when we put together the real estate, when we did some of the construction, leveraging things like you said, community grants. You'd be surprised at strategically selecting location that you can get grants, you can get loans, you can get all sorts of things. And we didn't really do any debt financing for any of this. This is all based no debt financing. This is all based on the entire rehab I paid for out of pocket, but I was able to be back paid with most of the community loan or grants, And it was by strategically finding a zeal in the market. Mm-hmm. And that's what we looked at doing.
And with that, for young people that are looking to, like you said, being on that shoestring, that's such a walk of faith, if you will, which I know you are a man of God. And how much is so many, I always tell people, so much that goes into success. And I think sometimes we look at a journey of a Oprah or just all these people that have just accrued great masses, if you will, like a massive, a mogul mentality, if you will. But it's such a journey to that. And with, you know, you're talking about your faith, being able to walk on the shoestring and just having all of that, those things going, how much of that do you accredit to kind of, I guess, piecing it all together for what your true mission is?
Right.
Because sometimes we do get distracted, or we may think something that's our calling, but it's just something that's temporary for the moment and needs to be done. So do you ever feel like, am I making the right choice? Am I making the right choice?
Yeah. And I think, I was
especially for what you want to do. Sorry.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I was watching a sermon a couple weeks ago and it was about the idea of you should be doing things with the joy and the love of God. Like this should be something that you're not doing this because you're like, hey, is this the path you like want me on? You're not looking for the approval, but more you're like, I'm going to please you with this. And I'm confident that I can do this with the joy and love in my heart for you. And I think that that's one of the strategies to do it. And when you can finally align with, you know, you're doing this not for your best interests, but for his best interest, then things start to align much stronger for you. And it's funny, we had a tournament here at the Venture Project for Mario Kart. And I don't remember if you remember playing Mario Kart, but you play the game and you get those little like mushrooms that give you the turbo boost or whatever. And it's almost like that when you start to get in alignment with your divine mission, is you start to get these boosts, things start to align for you because you know you're doing something in the right direction. And I really believe that. And I think that there's a lot of wit and strategy to trying to design something, a clever business for you, but there are pieces that have to fall by the grace of God for you to have to make it work. And in a lot of ways that happened with this.
Yes. Do you think a lot of your journey was unexpected, going from high school, being like this guy who's like into sports, and then, you know, just taking your journey to the military, going through the injury, like how much, because we all make these great plans in our mind and it's always great, but then all these trials and tribulations start happening. How was it managing that?
Oh my gosh. I mean, like I said, I pictured myself, you know, as a investment banker on Wall Street for the early part of my life. I didn't picture entrepreneurship as really a thing. I thought I'd be getting my MBA at an Ivy League school. And here I am getting my MBA at UW Oshkosh, you know, because there's strategies to that. Like I wanted to leverage the community members for my business. Yeah. And I wanted to be part of getting an MBA is networking. And some people think that's a stupid idea. I don't know. I think it's been working out great.
Yeah.
We've had several professors come in here to give seminars and classes. We've had students coming in through the door because of relationships we've built with faculty. Okay. You know, you can think your strategy works all the time by just having some golden, you know, leaves around your name, but that's not what I was thinking. I'm doing this for the people. And I think that there's like a whole bunch of different ways to look at a scenario and figure out, is this the place I need to be at this time, and be okay mm-hmm. with the uncertainty that everything doesn't have to be planned, that long-term vision that you're like, I'm going to become the person. I think Jim Rohn said that it's not about what you end up doing, but it's more about who you end up becoming. And when I got that flip, I started to figure out who's the person I want to be. And that's when I started to notice that life changed for the better in better ways than I really wanted to anyway, early on.
Yes. And that's something for me, because I think probably 2-3 years ago, I just had to let go of what I thought life would be. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just changed my perspective and just kind of let God's will take over. Mm-hmm. Because we all have this big dream of like, this is what I want my life to be. And it just doesn't happen that way. You know, you have life happens. You know, for me, I went through Hurricane Harvey, just graduating. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of things, just a lot of life things happen. And I don't think it's good to be pessimistic, but you never ever just imagine some of the trials and tribulations life take you through. That's why I wanted to ask you that.
Yeah.
It's just.
And that's the thing, like, and it's a biblical concept too, is mm-hmm. that life is a struggle. It will be a struggle. Mm-hmm. If you're in a good spot right now, that's awesome. But there will be parts of your life where you're going to experience loss, where you're going to experience mourning, you're going to experience financial hardship, health issues. That's going to come in various forms of struggle that you can experience. And unfortunately, like, we can't control those things. We can only control how we respond to those things. And if you can respond in a way that is strong, that is in the will and the direction, and you can use your faith to kind of help pull you through those moments, it's going to be much more beneficial than dwelling on it or trying to push the responsibility off to other people. And I just so believe that, because of people of various different backgrounds or cultures or any issues that you might find, all the challenges are different and they have different levels of severity and struggle. And I think if we can take the focus off of the struggle and put the focus on the solution, it'll help everybody start to channel. I mean, I always use the analogy, I was a football player and I'd come after the games, I'd have like scratches and bruises and all this stuff that I didn't even notice I had when I was playing. You know, because you have adrenaline, because you're focused on the win, because you're playing and you don't notice the little nicks. And then after the game, you're like, wow, I was really nicked up or whatever. Imagine if you go through life like that. Mm-hmm. Someone throws a nasty comment out at you on Facebook, or you go through an unfortunate circumstance, or a family member has a health problem or something like that. But you're able to be so focused on the mission that you don't notice the scratches. You don't notice it because, like, look, we have a place we're going. We have a direction. Most people don't do that. Mm-hmm. Most people just sit there and allow these things to happen. Mm-hmm. And then they have to sulk in their own emotion and it becomes a problem and it starts to cause issues.
They let life happen to them.
Yeah. Instead of taking control of it.
And I think being able to control what you can control is important. And one of those things is the mind. You have to be able to get your perspectives together because as life happens, we know the media, just being in media, just all these different headlines, so much has been going on in our world. And I think for all of us I feel like the last 5 years has been nonstop stuff. So out there there is a 22-year-old kid, maybe even a 32-year-old person that's listening to us right now that has this vision of life that they want to make things happen. And they are looking at someone like you who's very established, accomplished. What would you say the first step is in making your dreams come true?
Yeah. So you'll hear two pieces of advice from people. One will be to, you know, hey, it's okay. You're growing up. Sometimes your dreams have to go on the shelf. Everybody pretty much rejects that advice if you're really trying to go somewhere.
Me.
Yeah, right. You know, like just put your dreams on the shelf. Like, it's okay. You know, and people just give up, or they'll have their first kid and they'll say, look, things changed. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to give up all my dreams and passions, whatever. Then their group of people is just like, look, you got to go all in. You know, quit your job, do this or that. And I don't really think that's the right path either. Because when I was reading a book about the best investors in the entire world and the ones that manage hedge funds, what they're looking for is something called asymmetric risk versus reward. That's what is the highest upside for the least possible downside. Quitting your job would have a high upside and a high downside. That's not necessarily a good strategy. But if you stay in your job, work on a side hustle that has potential and craft your plan to say, look, I have very low risk in this situation. Maybe it's a cushy job where I can come home after work. I can work on my side hustle and it's easy and I can keep doing this. Like, that's a great situation. Maybe it's a really tough job. Maybe it's about finding a higher paying job that's cushy or whatever, you know, like removing your strategy around to where you have very low downside. Quitting your job is high downside because it doesn't work. And I had a guy in here and he's just like, no, Gary V, everybody says just go. And it's just like, here's the thing though. You can work on that for 6 years. If it flops, now you're in your late 20s with nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
If it was your side hustle, you had a full-time job the last 6 years, you're throwing some money into your 401k, okay, your Roth IRA, you got a big stack of cash. Now it flops. Now you just pivot to the next thing and you've got a stack of 200K maybe you can dump into a new investment that was your own money. No investors, 100% equity, whatever, you know. And I was trying to explain that to him. He obviously didn't listen and, you know, whatever. Long story short, you know, you can listen to advice or not, whatever you want to do. But I think that that's the strategy to a 22-year-old that's like, look, I want to find my passion. I want to follow my dream. Figure out a way to do it with the least amount of risk, but where you still have a high opportunity of upside. Instead of just looking at, oh, well, if I quit my job or go jump in this new direction, go bust tables in Hollywood. Well, that's a low down. That's a huge downside too. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, is there somebody you can call? Is there someone in your network you can know? If you're trying to make it big as an actor or whatever, what are the 5 degrees of freedom to get you to the person that could green light? Mm-hmm. Do I have to start warming up this guy to warm up this person, to warm up this person? And now I finally broker my meeting and I can pitch him. Like, that's more of the strategy I would look at if I'm trying to get places.
I think that's so important. Before we go, we have to touch on you being a podcaster. So we did talk a little bit about it, but also there are so many of us out there who are wanting to do podcasts. How do you leverage that success with podcasting or being able to accomplish something within it? Because there are so many, there are, I think they said hundreds of thousands of podcasts out there now, all different languages, all different cultures, all covering so many different things. So how are you able to just 100% stay in your bag and just be consistent? And especially because we both talk about starting with a small following to growing to where you are now.
Right. And I had a podcaster in here yesterday who interviewed me and asked the same question. And I think one of the best things you can do if you're a podcaster and really in a lot of different things is find out how, like, obviously the number one thing is consistency. Okay. So the hardest part is figuring out a way that's going to make you be consistent, removing all of the barriers to get you to be really consistent. So obviously you can see here, we have a pretty lean setup, and I do that intentionally because if I want to professionally produce a podcast, have a whole staff of people to do whatever, you know, edit things or I have to edit things, there's way that the likelihood of me putting out more episodes goes up insanely high, extremely high. It's a much, much better chance I won't put out episodes if it's a lot of work.
Okay.
So I want to make it the least amount of work to get going so I can have consistency, because consistency, all the algorithms on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play reward people that have more episodes out and have large bases of listenership. Okay. That's how that works. So what I try to do is figure out a way to lower all the bench, just a USB microphone and a webcam. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be good enough quality for most people to stay engaged.
Yes.
You know, and it's going to be most about the quality of what you have to talk about and the quality of guests you have on your show or whatever style you do. But if you want to do a high-end produced podcast, it'll sound better. It might get some attention early on, but if you can't keep that consistency up, I think it's all for waste. Yeah. So that's the first thing I'd look at for anybody. And it's the same thing with like going to the gym, right? Or working out. My wife has a personal fitness business. Yeah. And the first thing is staying in shape is consistency. So find something you like, right? It's if you like walking or biking or swimming or lifting weights, whatever your thing is or genre of fitness, the thing that's going to get you out the door every time is much better than picking something that's got way higher result possibilities, but forces you to do something you don't like. Yeah. And that's, I think, the advice I would give to really anybody looking for long-term consistent results.
Yes. Consistency is key. That's something I'm inspired by. I'm just like 52 by the end of this year, I need to have 52 episodes. There's 1 week. That's 1 week for one episode for every week.
Maybe we could split this one into like 4 or 5. Then you can knock out 4 or 5 episodes, you know, like some guys do.
I know. That's why I'm just like, no, but you know, not going to take the lazy way. You got to do it the right way. But thank you so much for joining me I'm so used to saying this morning, but thank you for joining me. I think this was very educational. Just gives people just a little bit of meat and potatoes. Didn't give away all the book that's going to come. I know you're going to have a book, but so if you want to, of course, you know, subscribe to our to my podcast, but also you want to check out Aaron has a bunch of things happening in Oshkosh, but also if you are online, you can also check out Venture Project on Instagram.
Yep. If you go to my website, AaronJArmstrong.com, there's a tab for my podcast and there's a tab for the Venture Project. You can get all your information there.
Winners, wallets, and world views. I love that. So thanks again for joining me. Thank you for having me on the
Thanks so much, Faith.
No problem. All right, guys, that is this week's episode. Thank you all so much for tuning in this week. Be sure to tune in every week to check out all of our new episodes. We are available on all platforms, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Podbean. And I want to give a special shout out to J Visuals for the graphics. So be sure to stay tuned for more exciting things to come. Have a good week. Be blessed and in abundance.